Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on this, the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, hosting yet another hour of fabulous old-time radio. And first of all, we'll rock it out to space with a program on X-1, as a famous radio science fiction series. And the episode's called The Castaways from 1954. 30 minutes from now, we'll hear from that adventurer, Rocky Fortune, played by Frank Sinatra, and The Psychological Murders from 1954. Now, here's X-1.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, The Castaways, by Ernest Kinoy. In the South Pacific, night comes on rapidly. The sun dips below the flat horizon, the sea is crimson for a moment, and then night falls. But on Tahani Atoll, giant arc lights turn night into day. Across the waters of the lagoon, within the barrier reef, launches and tugs skitter back and forth, while on the curving half-moon of the island, army trucks and jeeps scuttle down the rough roads bulldozed by the Seabees just 6 weeks ago. A low Quonset hut stands near the beach, surrounded by tangled wire. This is the preliminary command post, and inside is General Frank Gaydosh, field director of the test. Operation Destruction.
Everything's on schedule, General. Radiological surveys complete. Instruments placement checked.
Well, get me Navy and tell them H-hour is as ordered. Send a periodic time check to Air Force on 90-week tuck. An observation control on the Missouri.
Yes, sir.
I want a complete roster check on all personnel before H-hour.
Yes, sir. Nate Cohen wants to see you.
Well, who the devil's he?
AP man. He's been selected by the press radio pool to interview.
I haven't got any time. Tell him to speak to Major Dwight Vredenberg. He's the PRO.
I think perhaps you'd better see him, sir. The directive on public relations from Washington was very clear.
Well, how in blazes am I supposed to run a bomb test and play mother hand to a bunch of reporters?
Washington said...
All right. Bring him in. Borelli?
Yes, sir.
Give me some black coffee, will you?
Yes, sir. This is Mr. Cohen, General Gaydosh.
How do you do, General?
Lousy, as a matter of fact.
Is that an official statement?
No. You can run some of that "the world is at the crossroads" baloney.
I wrote that yesterday. General, what effect do you think the new bomb will have on the world situation?
I can't tell you that, even if I knew. My job is to set the blasted thing off and see that nobody gets hurt and collect the data.
Can I speak to you a moment, sir?
Later, Alan. Go ahead, Cohen.
Can you release anything on the scientific principles involved?
I don't even understand them myself. Wait a minute. Dr. Muller?
Yes?
Come over here a minute, will you? Cohen, this is Dr. Fred Muller, civilian scientific director. He's the only one who knows what's inside that warhead.
How do you do, Mr. Cohen?
How about a statement, Doctor?
Oh, I'm afraid all I'm allowed to say is that the bomb is new, it's extremely powerful, and off the record, it's very tricky and dangerous.
What'll happen if it goes off prematurely?
I don't think we have to worry about that. In fact, we wouldn't even know about it. If you'll excuse me now.
How about the natives?
Well, what about them?
Aren't they going to be evacuated from the island?
They already have been.
General Gaydosh.
Well, I saw the Tahani chief outside when I came in. The whole tribe squatting down at the motor pool having a conference.
What?
Alan!
I've been trying to tell you, sir, that Hani are still on the island.
Well, why? The LCTs are ready, aren't they?
Yes, sir, but they won't go. They refuse.
The schedule called for their evacuation to Mailani 3 hours ago.
I realize that, sir, but I hoped we could still get them off without violence.
Look, Alan, they're either on the island or off. Now, wait a minute. Cohen, that's all.
What are you going to do about the natives, General?
Never mind. I'll issue a statement later.
You going to force them?
Go on. Get out. I haven't got time.
All right, General. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
All right, Alan. Let's have it.
Well, sir, that Hani been kicking up all along. They won't leave.
They won't. Do they know what's going to happen to the island? Do they know that we're going to blow it higher than a kite?
I told the chief. He just said they won't go.
They'll go, all right, if I have to... Yeah, hey, get him in here.
The chief?
Yeah, and that lieutenant who interprets.
Yes, sir.
How do you like that, Dr. Muller? I haven't got enough trouble.
You know, I feel rather sorry for the Tahani. Can't make much sense to them. We arrive and tell them they've got to get out.
Look, I appreciate your finer feelings, Muller, but I can't let the Kanakas hold up the bomb test.
They're not Kanakas, General. Captain Cook discovered the island in 1788.
Well, what's the difference?
Lieutenant Gilbert reporting, sir.
Aloha, Kalahire Metuakonano.
Hey, look, I haven't got time for ceremony, Gilbert. Tell the chief he and his tribe have got to get off the island. We're providing homes for them on Mailani. Translate, Gilbert.
The chief says you do not understand. Mailani is a bad island. My people have lived on Tahani from the time that our ancestors were cast away on the island. The spirits of our ancestors are buried in the earth. Our fathers are buried here. Our fathers' fathers.
If he thinks I'm going to move his graveyard, he's crazy.
In our ancestors' time, the Tahani came in a great bird canoe. We were cast away on this island. We have made it our home. What right have you now to carry us over the sea to a strange land where we would die weeping for our homes? We will not go.
By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and we wept when we remembered Zion.
Well, thank you, Dr. Muller. You're a great help. Say, Gilbert.
Yes, sir.
Tell him I have no choice. He's got till midnight to get his tribe on board those LCTs peacefully, or I'll have the Marine detachment carry him aboard.
Yes, sir.
Isn't that rather harsh, General? After all, justice is on their side. We're preparing to blow up their island, and we haven't asked them about it.
Dr. Muller, will you kindly confine yourself to the scientific aspects of this operation? I'll take care of administrative matters.
If you could explain to them what's at stake here.
Any further explaining I've got to do, I'll do with the Marine detachments. I'm not going to hold up my schedule. Well, Gilbert?
I told him, sir.
All right, get him out of here. I've had enough.
No, koala.
What the devil's that?
Some kind of a curse, sir. I can catch some of it. The island will remember the tears of its children and punish the invaders. The great destroyers will not destroy. And the evil man who is the chief will travel far through the blackness of night. Even as the children of the island end, so will he.
All right, Gilbert, take him away.
You in here, sir.
Colonel Allen, get a detail from the Marine detachment with tear gas and small arms down to the motor pool. And in 1 hour, have those natives on that transport, and I don't care how they do it. Is that my coffee, Varelli?
Yes, sir.
They must know about the bomb. The great destroyer will not destroy.
You worried about that curse?
I should think you might be. He threatened you personally. If I were you, I'd carry a pistol till they got off the island. The chief looked as if he'd cheerfully strangle you with his bare hands.
I'm supposed to end the way they do, huh? What's that?
Probably the Tahani saying goodbye to their island. I think I'll go down to the motor pool.
Well, stay out of the way. And get back here in an hour. You've got to have this wrapped up and headquarters moved out to the Missouri by dawn.
Instrument room checking in, sir.
That's the last. Have the Missouri take over control and send for my jeep.
Yes, sir.
Are the LCTs standing by for those natives?
Yes, sir. They're on the beach.
The bomb unit is assembled in place, General.
2330, right on the nose. Robin, start evacuation procedure.
The Tahani, you've stopped.
Allen's probably moving them out to the beach. Check in with Navy and Air Force, Varelli.
Yes, sir.
What's that?
Coming from the beach.
The Tahani making trouble. Come on.
General.
Hey, you, Gilbert, what is it?
Colonel Allen ordered the Marines
Well,
in.
What happened?
The natives just got up and started marching.
Did they embark?
You don't understand, sir.
They marched up the cliff and right off into the lagoon.
What?
All of them. The women and the kids, too. They didn't even try to swim.
What were you doing all this time? Just standing around with your thumb in your mouth? Where was the Marine detachment?
We couldn't stop them, sir. They just walked over the cliff. They didn't even scream. Not even the kids. We sent the crash boats out, but we couldn't get them, any of them.
The crazy idiots. Were there any reporters there?
Well, Cohen and a life photographer.
Well, get his film and hold it till I release it.
What are you going to do, General? Postpone H-Hour?
It's too late for that now. And calling H-Hour off isn't going to bring the natives back.
But 100 men, women, and children just walking into the water. It's horrible.
I know. I'm not happy about it either. There's nothing we can do now. I gave him a chance to get off.
I was just thinking about the curse the chief put on you. Even as the children of the island end, so will he.
That's what he said to you, General.
I know, I heard him.
Your jeep's waiting, General.
The great destroyer will not destroy. That must mean the bomb.
Don't worry, Dr. Muller. It'll take more than a mumbo-jumbo curse from a native witch doctor to stop this operation. At H-Hour, that bomb goes off.
It is now H-Hour minus 1 minute, 30 seconds. H minus 1:30.
Video screen's hooked in, sir.
All right, check control stations.
Observation station one.
Observation station one, check.
Radiation station.
Radiation control, check.
Test the firing circuit, Dr. Muller.
Right, General.
Damage control station.
Damage control, check.
All set.
Communications.
Communications, check.
All checked in, sir.
It is H minus 1 minute. H minus one.
Take a good look at that island on that screen, Dr. Muller. When you throw that key, it just won't be there anymore. Nothing but an atom mushroom over the lagoon.
Quite a funeral pyre for the Tahani.
Stubborn idiots. They can't get in the way of progress.
Progress? I wonder if it is, General.
It is H minus 30 seconds. H hour minus 29, 28, 27, 26.
The great destroyer. That's what he called the bomb.
Hold it, Muller. Allen, report.
All checked in, sir. Camera's running.
Sound fire warning. Stand by for firing. Ready, Muller?
Ready.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire!
General, it didn't go off. The bomb didn't go off.
Borelli, signal standby, condition red.
Yes, sir.
Allen, check readings. Muller, what's wrong? What happened?
I don't know. The bomb didn't go off.
Well, what do you mean? Why didn't it?
I don't know, except for one thing. The Tahani chief said the great destroyer would not destroy. It didn't, General. The bomb didn't go off.
How about it, General? What happened? Have you got a statement?
Nothing you can use, Cohen. Not till we find out what went wrong. Hey, who let you come aboard this ship?
I walked on. You don't know why the bomb failed?
It didn't fail. It just didn't go off.
What's that tank thing on the deck, General?
Undersea salvage unit, Mark IV. They call it a bottom crawler.
Somebody going down?
Well, that bomb is down there in the lagoon somewhere. Could go off at any second. Somebody's got to go down and find it and disarm it.
That's a lovely job. Who's elected?
I am.
Wow.
And Dr. Muller. He's the only one who knows how to dismantle it.
Crawler's ready, General.
All right. Come on, Muller.
I'm ready.
Allen, as soon as we hit shallow water, get those gates open. We'll pull the crawler out. And then you get away in a hurry. If that bomb goes while we're working on it, I don't want any casualties.
Yes, sir.
Inside, Muller.
All right. I'm in.
Now, remember, get this LST out of the lagoon in a hurry. You got that, Allen? You take your orders from Admiral Yancey.
Yes, sir. Good luck.
Closing the hatch. The radar and Geiger counter warmed up, Muller.
I was just thinking of something, General. That curse, part of it came true. The bomb didn't go off.
Well?
The second part of that curse was that you would end where they ended. That was at the bottom of the lagoon.
What are you trying to do, Muller?
Nothing.
was just thinking this crawler is going to take us right down there where the Tahani died.
I'm not worried about a handful of dead natives, Muller. I'm worried about that bomb. Okay, they're opening the gate. Let's go. USU-4 to control. Depth 50 feet, bottom sandy, dropping off sharp. Anything on sonar, Muller?
School of fish.
You ever been down in a crawler before?
Only in the tank at New London. Think I've got a Geiger reading dead ahead. Hang on. Getting something on sonar now. Left to point.
USU-4 to control. Over. USU-4 to control. Over. That's a fine note. The radio's out.
Dead ahead. Looks too large to be the bomb.
Can't see much on the forward vision plate. Hey, wait a minute. That's part of the reef ahead.
That's where the Geiger reading indicated. The bomb must have settled in a hole in the reef.
We'll have to go after it in diving suits. The suits are in the locker. Let's get this over with. The less time I spend down here waiting for that bomb to blow, the better I like it.
Muller, is your helmet clamped tight? You getting me all right on your headset?
Okay.
I'm going to fill the lock. Here goes the outer door. Let's go.
This isn't like that diving tank in New London.
Look out for that coral. It can cut you to ribbons.
There's a hole of some sort there.
Wait till I get the light up. See if you can get a Geiger reading out of that hole.
Just a... There. It's down there, all right.
Careful. I'll drop down first.
See anything down there?
Muller, get down here fast.
What is it? Find something?
The bottom of this hole. It's metal and the sides.
But it's the coral reef.
Look, welded joints. These are hull plates of some kind. And
look out, above us.
It's closing. Grab it.
Too late.
A metal hatch. It just slid over the top.
This is impossible. What's going on?
It's like an airlock.
The water's being pumped out. General, do you realize what this means?
I'm not sure. There's an inner door opening. Careful.
It's a passageway. What do we do now?
There isn't much we can do. We can take off our helmets, though. The dial shows good air. All right. Come on.
What is this? An undersea fort? What's it doing here? What does it mean?
Whatever it is, our bomb must be down here. Wait. There's someone there.
I can't see. There's a shadow. Who is it? Who's there?
Welcome, Dr. Muller. Welcome to our ship. We've been waiting for you.
General... It can't be. Do you see it? It's the Tahani chief.
How long has the bottom crawler been down, Borelli?
4 hours, sir. 2 since we lost contact.
Now, keep trying.
Yes, sir.
I've given him enough time. I'm going to send another crawler down.
What do you figure happened to him, Colonel?
Well, there are a lot of things that... Hey, how did you get in here?
I walked in. When are you going to release this, Colonel? It's the biggest story since the election. Bomber dead and Dr. Muller and General Gaydash dead.
They're not dead. At least we don't know they are. As long as that bomb doesn't go off, there's still a chance that...
What happened?
Bomb. Early, condition red. Gilbert, radiation control into action. Get the hot squad into Tahani Lagoon as soon as it's cleared. And get me a PT boat with radiation screens.
What is it, Colonel? What happened?
The bomb must have blown.
How about Muller and the General?
If they were down there in that lagoon, you guess. Now get out of my way. I'm busy.
Radiation reading 75 and steady.
Take her in as close to the beach as you can.
Steady as she goes.
Is there any danger of any more explosions?
No. When she goes, she goes.
Radiation 82.
That's still safe. Cohen, is that something on the beach?
Yeah. Looks like a body. Maybe you blew one of the Tahani back out of the lagoon.
No. It's moving. Gilbert, glasses.
Yes, sir.
It's a man, all right. Head into the beach.
Who is it, Colonel?
Can't tell. He's in a diving suit. It's either Muller or General Gaydosh. Get his helmet off. Easy now.
Twist to the right.
There. It's Muller. Gilbert, help me get him out of this diving suit. We've got to get him to the medics.
No radiation burns, superficial bruises, mild shock. He'll be all right, Colonel.
Can he talk?
For a while.
Bomb go off.
It didn't.
He's still out of his head.
Quiet, Cohen. Go on, Dr. Muller. What did you find?
A ship. A giant metal ship there under the lagoon.
A submarine?
No. It was a spaceship.
Spaceship?
Camouflaged right next to the reef. When we went inside, we found the Tahani chief and all the tribe. Alive.
What? They drowned in the lagoon. I saw them.
No, they didn't commit suicide as we thought. They just dived underwater into the rocket airlock.
Rocket airlocks? Now, look, Muller, I know you've suffered a shock, but...
But it's true.
Can't be. A spaceship built by Polynesian savages.
But they're not savages. They're the castaways. They're from another planet. Don't you understand? Their spaceship was wrecked here 400 years ago. They've been waiting ever since for a chance to go home.
He's out of his mind. Better give him a sedative, Doctor.
No, wait a minute, Colonel. Remember their story about the great bird canoe? Maybe there's something to the legend.
Not the legend, it's true. They'd exhausted their fuel, came down out of space, couldn't find anything here on Earth to replace their fuel source until we developed atomic power.
Atomic power? You mean they stole our bomb?
That's right. Fished it out of the lagoon, hauled it aboard.
Yes, but... How could they convert it to atomic drive?
They made me dismantle it for them at the point of a gun. Then just before they blasted off, they let me go.
But what about the general?
Remember the Tahani curse?
I see. You mean they killed him?
You don't understand. I said I dismantled that bomb at the point of a gun. It was General Gaydosh who was holding the gun.
What?
He was one of them, one of their spies sent out to bring back the rocket fuel they needed. And the Tahani curse wasn't a curse at all. It said that when they left the island, so would he.
You mean he's with them now?
Yes. And after 400 years, the castaways are going home.
You have just heard X-1.
Well, men, not long ago we had little Bundle on Command Performance. A little bundle of soft fur with a pink nose, long ears and whiskers. Better known as Bugs Bunny of the animated cartoons, our little Bundle wrapped up the audience that took it home with him. Hundreds of you wrote in after that program and said, let's have more of Bugs Bunny. So, tonight we, excuse me, fellas. Somebody's walking on the stage.
Shh. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting wabbits.
Oh, you can't fool me. You're Arthur Q. Bryan.
Oh, look, wabbit twacks. I will follow the twacks. They go right over here, and they turn here, and then they hook.
What's up, Doc?
Shh. Be quiet, you. I'm on the trail of a widow gray woodland rabbit.
Yeah? What you gonna do with a rabbit when you corner it, Doc?
I'm gonna infiltrate his very vitals with a belly full of wet from this rifle.
You really mean it?
I really mean it.
Well, do you know what this rabbit looks like?
Well, he's got long, fuzzy ears.
Oh, you mean like mine, Doc?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a little fluffy powder puff tail.
Oh, like this little cotton thing I got on here?
Let's see it. Well, say, it's unbelievable, but he has, and he's always chewing on carrots.
You mean like this, Doc?
Yeah, yeah. The resemblance is remarkable. Hey, you know something?
Yeah,
you look just like a rabbit.
Oh, is that so? Oh, come here, Doc.
All right.
Now, look, I don't want you to spread this around.
Oh, I won't tell a soul.
But, confidentially.
Yeah?
I am a rabbit!
Oh, you are a rabbit, are you? Well, I thought so. Well, I got you covered with my rifle. Rabbit, you a dead duck. Say your prayers.
Just a minute, Doc. Who are you to go shoving heavy artillery into rabbits' abdomens? Why, was I doing you any harm? No. Just meandering through the woods, minding my own business, on my way to school.
On your way to school? Why, that's utterly ridiculous. What could rabbits learn in school?
Confidentially, Doc. To multiply.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Hi, this is The Rock. At least a 3-carat rock these days, since I'm digging my living out of the Park Avenue hills. Nats, I'm still hip to the Broadway and 10th Avenue beat while gathering my Mink Street paycheck. My process-serving occupation at Perry Shane's Law Factory only functions when there are processes to be served. Nothing was on the Park Avenue stove at this particular day, so I gathered up my frame and started to take it over to the other side of the tracks. While passing along and counting the mahogany panels in the outer office, the ultra-solid door of Perry Shane's inner sanctum opened. And a perfectly normal sound emanated from Mr. Shane's larynx.
Oh, Rocky, glad I caught you. I need another witness for this will. Mrs. Bigelow, this is Mr. Fortune.
Fortune? It's an odd name. It should be mine, and they could call me Miss Fortune. It's very funny. I didn't think I had a joke left in me.
Yeah. You should hear my material. Where do I sign?
It doesn't make much difference, Mr. Fortune. It's only a formality. It's a perfectly simple will. I'm only doing it because you insist, Mr. Shane.
I must insist, Jane. It's a perfectly clear legal document. You have no children, so your husband is your only beneficiary.
Well, if you'd rather I sign it later, I'll wait outside till you're ready.
Sign it now, if you like. It makes no difference to me. Because I know it will not be executed.
Well, you can take my 2 cents for its face value, but how can you be so sure?
I'm sure, Mr. Fortune, very sure. You see, I'm afraid I'm going to kill him.
With those deadly words, I expected her to jump on a broomstick and go sailing out of the window. Instead, she picked up her hairless mink made of aging tweed and closed the door behind her. I took the bulging double O's off the space she had just vacated and put them back in my skull. Say, Mr. Shane, is it not a little early for Halloween?
She's a very unfortunate woman, Rocky. A woman steeped in the deadliest of fears.
What's she afraid of?
She's afraid of losing her mind.
And she don't act like she's hanging on to it very well right now.
It's all groundless fear based on heredity. Her mother died insane, and she's convinced the same thing will happen to her.
What's all this routine about killing her husband? Shouldn't she be watched if she makes with statements like this?
Well, her husband is convinced it's harmless, and he won't let anyone else look after her. She's lucky she has him, at least.
Well, this is his life.
Yes, it's his life, and I'm worried about it. Rocky, I hate to ask you to do this for me, but will you go out there to their home for a few days and keep your eye on things?
Why not? Just give me time to go to my tailor's and pick up a special little drape shape.
Translation, please.
A white Benny, friend. A little white coat. I think this I'm going to need. white coat clutched in my white little hand, I made my way out to the Long Island barn of Mr. and Mrs. Thomas Bigelow. Shane paved the way with the help of Don Amici's favorite invention, and they were expecting me. The reception committee had nice, gleaming white teeth. Well, at least you could say hello. No worry, fellas. I ain't coming in without your permission. Now, take it easy, boys. Don't tell me my fatal fascination is working.
Well, it's all right. Back to the house, boys. Just open the gate, Mr. Fortune, and come in.
They're friendly little kids, aren't they?
Well, don't worry, Mr. Fortune. Open the gate. They obey me.
I hope they get the same message.
Will you, please make sure the gate is closed behind you?
What happened to the dogs?
Well, they've gone back to the house. They'll come back to the gates as soon as we're indoors.
Have you talked with Mr. Shane?
Yes, he called about an hour ago. I'm not quite sure what he expects you to be able to do. I don't think you can do anything. I don't think anyone can do anything.
Then why don't you help yourself? Where I come from, that's always the best treatment.
Help myself? I can't help myself, Mr. Fortune. If I could get myself to a doctor, I'd be doing just that.
So why not go?
Because I'm afraid of what he'll do after he examines me. I'm afraid of myself, Mr. Fortune. I'm afraid of what I'm capable of doing. I am capable of murder.
Now, let's take it easy, Mrs. Bigelow. Look, if you want to murder somebody, there's got to be a reason. It can't be money.
Money? Oh, no. Oh, no, it's not money. And it's not hate. You see, I love my husband, Mr. Fortune. And he loves me.
The house she ushered me into looked like it had been looking for a friend for years. This, like Madame, was a crazy little mixed-up house. Whenever you expected another room, you fell over another set of steps. She took me up one of these sets of steps, opened the door, and left a deposit. Me. The knocking that came upon my chamber door could have been the raven. It wasn't.
Good evening, Mr. Fortune. I'm Tom Bigelow.
Oh, hi. Come on in, Mr. Bigelow. I'm just sort of setting my compass.
I wanted to talk to you for a few minutes before we joined Jane downstairs.
Say, your wife's kind of upset.
It's nothing unusual. I'm afraid Jane is always upset by some fear or the other.
From my seat in the balcony, I'd say she needs a psychologist or a psychiatrist or something pretty bad.
And she needs one desperately, but I can't get her to go. This latest obsession is almost too much.
You mean about being afraid of killing you?
That's right. You know, she had me pick up a package for her at the sporting goods store in the village. I looked inside the package when I got home. It was a gun. When I asked her why she wanted it, she told me I needed it to protect myself against her.
You know, the common sense school don't give diplomas, so I can't set myself up as an expert, but it seems to me that you're not safe in this house while she's carrying around a little idea of knocking you off.
No one's safe in this house. That's why I wanted to talk to you alone. I appreciate Perry Shane's concern and your wanting to help, but it isn't safe. That's why we can't keep maids or cooks. The only help we have is Fred. He drives and does as much cleaning as possible. That's why the house is always in this condition. I just can't trust her with people.
What are you two talking about?
Oh, we were just about to come downstairs to join you, dear.
You were talking about me when I came in. What were you saying?
I was just telling Mr. Bigelow here that I'm a big boy now, and the salt air here on the island kind of gets the appetite.
Yeah, we shouldn't keep Mr. Fortune waiting for his dinner, dear.
I'm sorry, Mr. Fortune. Closed doors do strange things to me. I hear voices through them. Voices talking about me.
Well, they were voices, our voices. But we weren't discussing you.
I hope you won't mind, Mr. Fortune. I'm not feeling well. Would you mind eating with Tom?
Well, of course he wouldn't, dear. In fact, I don't think it's good for you to eat alone. I'll have Fred serve Mr. Fortune's dinner, and we'll eat in your room.
Oh, look, I can scramble some mean eggs myself.
Oh, no, don't worry about that. It's all prepared. He'll have his dinner, and we'll have a cordial together. And Fred will drive him to the station.
That sounds fine.
Well, I'll chat for a minute while you see about dinner, Tom.
Don't you tire yourself, dear. Go to your room and lie down, and I'll bring up our dinner.
Very well, Tom. You go see about dinner.
Only be a few minutes.
I was anxious to talk to you alone, Mr. Fortune, because of what Tom just said.
He said a lot of things.
He said that Fred would drive you to the station after dinner. Does that mean you aren't staying?
Well, yes. Of course, if you want, I'll come back tomorrow, but I got to get back to town tonight.
But I know you planned on staying. Why, after talking to Tom, did you change your mind?
I'm still wearing the same old mind, Mrs. Bigelow. I'm just pointing it towards town for the evening.
I'm not a child, Mr. Fortune. You're going back to town because Tom told you what I tried to do to Fred.
So what if you did try it on Fred? That don't mean it can happen to me.
Well, Tom is sure it can happen to you. Particularly now there's a gun in the house.
Look, if you're unhappy about the gun, why did you have Tom bring it in the first place?
I didn't want it, of course. Tom just thought I should have it handy because I'm alone when he and Fred go to the city.
You didn't order it from the village?
Well, of course not. I hate the sight of the thing. Particularly since I don't feel I can be trusted. Since I tried to kill Fred, I'm almost beside myself.
If you'd only go to the right kind of doctors for that.
I want to. I really want to, but Tom won't let me.
Tom won't let you?
No. I know why. He thinks they'll have me committed for good.
Mrs. Bigelow, I come from a part of town where killing only makes the inside pages of the tabloids. Small-time hoods, kids gone berserk, drink rotten, jealous husbands go haywire, and they kill. But at least they all think they got a reason. A real reason to them.
I realize that. That's why I can't understand why I'm afraid of killing Tom. I can't understand my taking an axe to Fred.
How long ago did you do this?
It was one night last week. I wasn't feeling well, so I took a sedative and I went to bed. I dreamed that night. Fred was in my dream. Without waking, I got out of bed, put on my robe, and I went outside. I went to the garage. I got an axe and went to Fred's cottage. He was in bed asleep. I raised the axe. Fred wakened and sat straight up in bed, horrified. I calmly put down the axe. Walked out of the room and went back to bed. If he hadn't wakened, I'd have killed him.
Now look, Mrs. Bigelow. You're a little mixed up now. Upset, you know. This whole thing could have been a nightmare. Never even happened.
I realized that. In fact, when I woke in the morning, I just thought I'd had a bad nightmare.
What changed your mind?
Next morning at breakfast, Fred came to Tom. Told him he was leaving. He didn't say why at the time. Tom questioned him later. He told him what happened. Tom finally told me.
I think I get the picture. It must have happened or Fred wouldn't know about it. He couldn't be reading your dream.
Exactly.
How come he's still here?
Tom prevailed on him to stay. He's our only hope of any help at all. Now he keeps his cottage bolted all night when he goes to bed.
Tell you what, Mrs. Bigelow, in some kind of way, I don't know how right now, but some way there's got to be somebody who can help you. Your story is straight, but you got to realize one thing. Going to the doctor doesn't mean you're going to be put away. Tell yourself that and tell Tom the same thing.
Oh, I need help. I want help. You lock your door tonight. Do anything, but please. Please don't leave me here alone. Please.
Hello?
Perry, this is Rocky.
What's the matter? Trouble?
Trouble? Man, I was young at heart when I got out here, but right now I feel like I've been traveling from here to eternity. Some pretty serious things going on around here, Perry. This gal already tried to kill the hired man. She told me how herself.
Oh, then it's much worse than I thought. If she really is homicidal, she better be put away now.
I don't know about that, Perry, but I do know you better fix up a date for her to see a good doc as soon as possible. Before retiring to my background for bats, Mr. Bigelow stopped in. He must have been feeling kind of rocky because that's what he was calling me.
Rocky, I'm still not sure you're doing the right thing. I'd feel much better if I knew you were on your way to town.
Don't worry about a thing, Tom. This will be the last night because I already talked with Shane. He's making a date for you and your wife to see a good psychiatrist tomorrow. Your wife's agreed to go.
I didn't want to be forced to tell you this, Rocky, but I'll have to now. I can't take Jane to see any psychiatrist.
Why not? She's willing.
I know she's willing. You've convinced her there's a chance she may be helped.
So maybe there is.
There isn't. I know, Rocky, because I know her case. I knew her mother's case before.
How do you know? Are you a doctor?
Yes, I am.
How come Perry Shane doesn't know this?
Because all that Perry knows about me is what Jane's mother told him. All this goes back quite a long time. Her mother befriended me many years ago, helped me out of some trouble. She had the same fears that Jane now has. The family strain is very weak. In her more rational moments, before she went completely insane, Jane's mother asked me to forget my practice and just look after Jane.
Didn't Jane know you'd been a doctor?
No. We decided to keep it from her because we never wanted her to know. Her mother had fears about her, too.
Tell me something, Tom. I know that when a guy gets very sick, they call in a couple of different doctors. Don't you think it'll be wise in this case?
Well, of course, I'm not a medical man. I'm a psychologist, but I'm sure of my diagnosis in this case. My old associate, Dr. Giles of Syracuse, worked with me on several similar cases.
Well, if the guy was close to you, why not call him?
I have no idea where he is now. We lost track of him years ago. It's just no use, Rocky. I hate to admit it, but there's no hope for my wife. Now let me have you driven back to town.
Won't be necessary, Tom. I can't close my eyes to everything you told me. You got a lot of guts to take it this way, and I think you're a great guy, but this case is too close to you. Your wife's gonna have to go to a doctor.
Okay, Rocky, have it your way. I hope you're still alive tomorrow to take her.
That was the last sound I heard from Mr. Bigelow, and the music it made to my ears was not from Harry James. This little boy was not going to help me get the treatment for his wife, even if he had to make like a Frankenstein to stop me. Somebody had to clear up some of the picture for me. Barry, it's me again. I got a long story for you, no time to tell it. You got some paper and pencil?
Wait a minute. Okay, go ahead.
Check on a couple of things for me, Perry. Try to track down a Dr. Giles in Syracuse, New York. G-I-L-E-S, I guess. Find out if he can possibly come down tomorrow to examine the wife of his old partner, Dr. Thomas Bigelow.
Who's Dr. Thomas Bigelow? Tom's father?
No, it's Tom, but keep it under your cap. It's important, though, that he gets down here tomorrow. And another little item, get a hold of Finger right away and ask him to check on something for me, will you? Ask him to rat out the owner of the sporting goods store in the village here and find out who in this house bought a gun from him recently. It's important to find out who ordered the gun that Tom picked up.
What's going on out there?
Right now, I wouldn't take any bets.
What's the name of the store? Where is it?
Who knows? There can only be one sports store in this one-horse village. Very fine, Mr. Shane. I'll be talking to you tomorrow. We had a third party on that line. I heard the click. Right now, it was important to find out three little items. Who was on the line with us? Why were they listening? And how much did they hear? By this time, the house was so quiet, it was noisy. First thing I did was take off the shoes and drop them one by one on the floor. All I had to do was try to get around the house without being heard and try to find the snooper. Ow. The door was as quiet as a dentist's drill, and just as sharp. One little light burned in the hallway, but all it did was make the shadows darker and bigger. No light showed under any of the other bedroom doors.
Finding it difficult to sleep, Mr. Fortune?
Hiya, Fred. I find it kind of tough to get to sleep with all this quiet going on. I guess I'm used to the big city.
Considering what happened to me the other night, then may I suggest you stay in your room?
Yeah, I guess maybe that's a good idea. Well, see you around. Now, what do you suppose this character was doing out in the hallway after the house had called it a night? It was supposed to be dangerous for him, too. Well, all I could do now was wait till later and find out if he was spending the night outside my door. Time was pulling to my eyelids. It was dragging, and it was dragging my eyes closed with it. I was blind as a bat when I shook myself awake, only this time it was from the dark, not the drink. I listened for any sound of movement. Nothing. I got the door open this time without seeing any signs of Fred. The small light was still on, but I could see practically nothing. I made my way along the hall in the direction of what I hoped was Jane Bigelow's room. Then I heard the sound that pulled me in the right direction. I was going in the right direction, and I had the crying of a woman for my compass. I got to a door and tried the knob. I closed it just as quietly as I opened it. Jane Bigelow was in bed, staring at the ceiling and sobbing her heart out. Mrs. Bigelow. Mrs. Bigelow.
Rocky. Help me, please. Please, Rocky.
Well, sure. Now, let's quiet down. Now, take it easy now. Come on.
Why do I think these things? Why do I hear my mind make these horrible plans?
What plans, dear?
What's the difference? You won't be able to hear them. Only I hear them.
The gun. The gun in your drawer. You take the gun out of your drawer.
Only I can hear them.
Shh, shh, shh.
Rocky, you hear it too? It's not just me.
Rocky is unconscious. You take the gun and you shoot Rocky. You take the gun and you shoot Rocky.
Is this the voice you heard when you thought you tried to kill Fred?
You do hear it, too.
This is the voice that keeps telling you you're going to kill your husband.
Yes. How can you hear it? It's in my mind.
Lady, this voice isn't in your mind. It's coming out of your wall someplace.
But what's happening, Rocky?
I'm not sure of the whole thing yet. Tell me, did the voice talk to you before? I mean, just a few minutes ago?
Yes. It woke me up. It told me I went to your room. I hit you over the head.
I got the picture. I think I'm getting the whole picture now, so let's give him some directions. We got to get out of here fast. He listened to my phone confab with Shane and knows we're getting on to him. This little boy is going to try to kill me tonight.
But who? Who's doing this?
Never mind. I'll take this little persuader along just in case. Come on, back to my room. Now keep hold of yourself. Remember one thing. There's nothing wrong with your mind. Remember that. I know this is rough for you, but it's almost over. Just keep hold. They're bound to come after me soon. Surprise, Herman. Come on in.
Rocky, what's the idea of the gun?
Just following your directions. Only instead of your wife supposedly shooting me with it, which is what you planted in her mind, I'm keeping this pointer right at your skull.
Rocky, what's going on? My head. Rocky, I can...
No, please don't faint on me. You feel okay. This bum has been talking to you and everything for years. Now just swallow and pull yourself together.
I'll be all right.
What a smart little voice of conscience game you pulled, Mr. Bigelow. Check me on a couple of points.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You will. Everything fits. You were a psychologist. You knew your wife was disturbed because of how her mother died, and you kept working on her by planning things to make her believe the same thing was going to happen to her.
And I didn't really try to kill Fred. I didn't.
Check me on this, Fred. Tom here coached you on the whole deal. The voice she heard, which was done through some simple gimmick planted through the house, it gave the story of what she was supposed to have done, right? All she actually knew about was what she heard. She never even left her room.
Don't tell him anything, Fred. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He don't have to. We'll find a gimmick in the house. That's how you planted every thought you wanted in her head. And why you were coming over here now to hit me over the head and then shoot me with this gun. Later, you'd convince her that she did it. It would happen that way, too, because it was all familiar to her. Familiar because of the thoughts you planted through the voice.
Why did he do all of this? How could he do all of this to me?
He was doing a very smart thing. Shane and everybody else knew that you had the obsession you were afraid of killing him. I'll make book. What he planned on doing was shooting you with his gun and then claiming self-defense against an insane woman. Or did both of you plan that, Fred?
That wasn't my idea. I don't go along with this murder business.
Shut up, you fool. There was never any thought of killing anyone.
The life you were leading your wife was worse than death. I want to know one thing, Bigelow. I'm sure now you no longer practice as a psychologist because you were thrown out by all the decent associates who knew you. Was that the little trouble Jane's mother got you out of?
No longer practice as a psychologist. You mean Tom was once a psychologist?
That's right. Figures, too. Only where decent docs use their know-how to help people, like most of them do, this crumb used his to try to destroy you. This I'll make book on without waiting for Shane's information.
But why? Why did he hate me like this?
He didn't hate you. He just loved your money more.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast include Maurice Hart, Betty Lou Gerson, Marvin Miller, and Frank Gerstle. Tonight's script was written by Norm Sickle. Andrew C. Love directed. To tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
What would you do if a guy offered you a one-way ticket to the moon, all expenses paid? Well, sir, this happens to me a couple of weeks ago. And the funny thing is, I'm all set to leave when I find out that the rocket to the moon is really a rocket to the morgue. And I'm traveling as a corpse, first class. I'll tell you about it next week. See you around.
Enjoy Fibber, McGee, and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.